Hi, everybody. Welcome to Below the Bonnet. I'm Michael Caruso, and David Reynolds is here, along with Andrew Van Leeuwen, and a very, very special guest today, boys, because
crowned a genuine champion.
A genuine champion.
A genuine champion. No controversy. Genuine champion. And here he joins us.
Garth Tander.
Congratulations.
Thanks for coming
here, mate. Thanks, boys. Yes. Thank you. Hey, I've been very fortunate in my career to have achieved a lot of success to varying degrees, but nothing comes close to this. This is a serious career highlight. The inaugural, the one and only, possibly only two.
We don't know yet.
No way. This has got legs.
We live in the co-driver sphere now, and this has got serious legs amongst the co-driver drivers.
Mate, this is all we think about. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it, like you normally. You know, you hear your co-driver chatting and they like, you know, they want good tyres. Now they're like demanding
it.
This is a big part.
Serious negotiation with the engineers. Give me good tyres.
Yeah, that's right.
I need points in the co-driver car.
How many sets of greens, Garth? How many sets of greens went into this campaign?
Exactly zero.
Yeah, none. They were green at one stage.
They were green a long time before we got them.
How's that going to change with the tyre bank rules next year?
What do you reckon?
Well, there's no tyre bank anymore.
Yeah,
so what do you do? Tyre bank's gone. That. There's only there is. You're allowed one set of rotor tyres. I reckon that's what you boys
guess
will
what
be running around.
Guess what we get?
Shitbox tyres. Shitbox tyres. All right, we won't be ever seen.
We get to run on the warm up allocation tyres.
Yeah, that's funny. Actually, it's funny you say that because I was chatting with Tim Edwards in catering on the weekend, and we were just chatting about how next year we're not doing the 260 races at Taylor.
Oh, the quali races.
Yeah. So
what are we doing instead?
Nothing. We're just to shoot out and bomb into the big one on Sunday.
Oh, yeah.
And we're just saying, you know, how can we mix it up? And Cam Waters actually came up with a good idea, and he goes, why don't we qualify the co-drivers?
Yeah.
He said, that'll really mix it. I'm like, Cam.
Yeah.
That sounds like a great idea, buddy.
Yeah. You still won't get greens.
Cam will make it up in the race. Yeah.
That's a shame, but because like that 60K co-driver race on Saturday was brilliant. It was so much better than a qualifying session to sit down and watch that. Like, it was
fantastic. I think the rain helped that.
But it's such a long, convoluted way to qualify.
Qualifying starts
at 12 o'clock on Saturday. It doesn't finish till 6 o'clock Saturday night. It's too long.
You're right, but it's entertaining. It's better than just watching a bunch of blokes banging out. Like, you sit there and watch that that co-driver race was good. And the sprint race is kind of fun, but then you remember when we were doing it all the time a few years ago. They weren't that good. You know, those non-pit stop races, they tended to not be good. So, I don't know.
I always enjoy those qualifying races, especially when I'm not driving.
Are you nervous? I mean, you're...
Not at all, no.
Conditions, because it was pretty mixed.
Oh, yeah, look, slightly nervous, but I'm not... I don't really care. Like, whatever happens, happens.
Surely you were. But, I mean, when I came up in the back of Luke, were you like, oh, no?
I was like, go, Luke.
Drive away from him.
No, it wasn't really. Like, it's just...
It's out of your hand, isn't it?
Exactly. It's just part of the racing.
Like, it is.
You hand your car over.
You got to back. I mean, I remember when I was primary, you got to back your co-driver.
Absolutely, you got to back your choices.
Even if they take someone out, you're like, there's no way he was at fault. Absolutely. What was the other guy thinking? What was he thinking coming across him?
Moff on the weekend. Moff was classic, wasn't he?
He gave a good spray
to the wrong car.
To a bloke that was about 500 meters behind him.
But in fairness to him, though, like when you're out there, you need to come back on eventually.
Yeah. You need some room.
Need a little bit of room. So,
but that was awkward. But with Thomas there, he was hanging on to it hard as well. Like in those conditions, it wasn't like he was trying to feed the bloke off the track. I think he was.
No, but I think when it's your teammate, or a car within your team, you normally. Just a little bit kinder, you know. You're sort of a bit more spatial awareness.
That's 10 laps into a qualifying race. Yeah. There's still another qualifying race, another 500Ks to go. It's
but no doubt they would
have
been
championship stuff.
It is world championship stuff.
That was the co-driver cup finale. You got to be
the Covenant Cup.
That's probably it. You know, he's probably thinking, well, I could make up some points in the co-driver cup. Who cares where I'm starting the 500?
But in all honesty, if you look at the actual points tally, it's all the best drivers at the top, wouldn't you say? Like, besides,
I don't know,
Caruso down in.
Oh, is that the final point score?
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah,
you had it signed up before the last race. You had it absolutely signed up. It was all gone.
I think we've got to take some points off car 17.
Well, at Bathurst, there's absolutely no doubt. the Thursday practice session and the Friday session.
We take our points system seriously here, so
yep. We'll get into that a bit deeper, but let's go. We obviously going to cover it.
See this, happened. Dave?
This is called a run sheet.
Yeah. Dave has no idea.
He's allergic to run sheets. He doesn't even want to look at.
I just want to press play and start talking about rubbish. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you said it, Dave. We're gonna let's just quickly cover your brief appearance on Sunday.
I didn't even have an appearance on Sunday. I appeared at the track and then I watched
you drove
the cars
the warm-up.
Go around.
I did
four laps in warm up, which is good.
How was the car?
It was actually pretty ordinary in warm up. Wasn't the best. So we made some changes for the race, and then Luke got a good start. He started third. Got to the turn one in third, and then he got jutted off by Kostecki, I think, dove him at turn nine. Is it Danny Rowe?
Yeah, that's right. You taken someone off. That rings a bell for me.
Yeah, that's right. We've got something in common. And then, obviously, he was trying to make his way through the field again. He was trying to pass Dale, and then Dale was trying to pass the car in front. They all just seemed to squeeze each other to the fence. And the way I look at that incident, it was no one's real fault. Like, it was just one of those racing incidents. They're all squeezing each other to the fence.
I tell you what, when I came around, and you probably would have been similar, I was like, what the hell's going on?
It was like two cars. It was like a small plane crash.
Yeah. It's like when you see a car driving down the highway, a straight bit of road upside down, you're like, hang on.
How did that person do that?
Like, you couldn't do that if you tried, but when you watch the replay, it all made sense.
Yeah, yep. And
yours is like similar person.
Same driver, similar accident.
But wheel to wheel contact's kind of different. Once the wheels sort of grab. If it happened just either side of the wheel, it would have been fine.
The worst thing about that is it's 28 laps in the race. You know, you're not really racing for much that early. So to get stuck in the fence, it was pretty disappointing because we thought we were in a good little spot.
Did you have pace in your car, you think?
Yeah, yep. Yeah, and I was in a good spot.
These blokes.
Well, definitely
no
not
one,
as
no
much
one
as
one has
I mean, come from last. I mean, yeah, the car was obviously, I mean, you were both driving
first
good, you and Shane.
You got to like
seventh?
Yeah, some ridiculous.
Well, you got me, I think I was in sixth or seventh.
Well, you restarted the safety car sixth.
Because I was in behind you. I was like, this is a great little spot because you were on fresh tyres.
Yeah, I was on greens.
And I was like, I'm just going to sit in here and when he goes, I'll go.
Our thing was lit. It was awesome. So, looked after. I mean, the thing that it had, it was fast, but it looked after its tyres deep into the stint. So
They've always had that sort of strength. Yeah. There. They've always
You've got to drive
everyone.
It a particular way, though. So I learnt that.
Tell me.
Yeah, I'm not saying. I learnt that I didn't do that well enough at the Gold Coast on Saturday. And then I adjusted for Sunday, and it made a big difference. So then taking that into the Sandown race helped a lot. So what we could do is we were actually thinking that going to go three stop and just save fuel all day and just
it's funny.
That's
it,
how we're going to do
that's
it.
That's what we were speaking about.
Yeah, yeah. It was so close on the economy. So it was really determined on how the first three laps went, how far I got.
And then
because I'd made enough and the car was quick and I could keep punching through them, they said, right, just go full fuel. We're going to four stop and see what you can do. So once everyone started pitting around 17 to 25, it just opened up and I had clear air.
Yeah.
And I could still, like, I think at that stage, Craig had pitted and had fresh tyres on, and I was still quicker than Craig on old tyres, and he was on fresh tyres. So that's then when we knew that we were in a pretty good place and we could then make that long strategy work where we just kept stretching the fuel window towards the end.
It's funny because when we started the race, it was a similar opinion. We're like, we'll probably try to do three, but we'll check how the deg is. And then after about 10 or 15 laps, we're like,
do four stops.
Everyone had the same idea. It's funny, I didn't think the deg would be that bad on the weekend, but it was actually, it obviously car performance helps at that joint because you're constantly loading that right
but
rear
don't
up.
Forget also when they resurfaced the track, they resurfaced all the entries and none of
and
the
none
exits
of the exit,
so you end up carrying a heap of corner speed in and then you can't get off the corner, so you're just sitting there wheel spinning and you obviously want to get on with it. So the track was a lot faster. I don't know what it was like for you guys. Turn two, the curb at turn two, to see seem heaps more aggressive this year.
yeah
Yep. Because that's because they resurfaced turn one, and the speed in the two was so much faster. You just fire it off the curb.
The braking into one was the one that blew me away.
Yeah, how deep we were, yeah.
So deep.
It was sort of around the 110, 120 mark. Like, it was so deep, you were contemplating every lap, am I going to get around this corner?
I raced the GT car there a couple of weeks ago for the first time I'd ever driven the GT car at Sandown. And in the first co-driver practice session, I ended up using my GT braking reference point as a reference to drive the supercar, not my old supercar braking. It was like 30 metres deeper. It was crazy how much more grip it had. How cool would that joint be if they resurfaced the whole place?
Be fast.
Hey, you've got to keep all the bumps.
Keep the bumps. Yeah. Like, just do it like they when they resurface Queensland Raceway. Just lay it on top, over the top of the bumps.
And then after a year, it's all
that's right. Yeah. Just lay it over the top. But how cool would it be?
Yeah, it's a great track.
I like the challenge of every track having deg. And
it definitely makes better racing, the deg. Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Oh, we're big believers on this show.
Of the deg.
Big believers. I mean, it does. Everywhere you have that, it creates racing, because then you've got cars that are good or people looking after their tyres. And that was probably one thing that saved the race there. There was actually some passing going on. You would have been watching on.
Well, heaps of cars are getting passed.
There was actually passing where I think going into the event, we were all probably a little bit worried it was going to be a boring processional race.
Yeah, particularly after the Gold Coast, where it obviously just looked so hard to pass there.
Yeah.
You know, it's always hard to pass there, but it looked particularly hard. And Bathurst as well, you know. Everyone was talking about how hard it was at Bathurst.
Was hard
to
pass
Bathurst. See some passing was good, yeah.
I think also, I mean, what was it like for you boys? Well, you probably didn't get in race conditions, but following across the top, across Dandy Road, turn six, that for me was worse than across the top of the mountain at Bathurst.
It was pretty bad.
It was terrible. You just couldn't stay close enough at all. So no one was really, unless someone made a mistake in front of you at Dandy Road and you could get down the inside at turn nine cleanly, there was no passing going on down there. It was all off turn nine to turn 11. Yeah. Turn
That's
one,
right. yeah,
or turn two if you were sneaky enough to get up the inside. So it sort of shows you that the fast part of the track, there was no passing going on, but all the slow stuff, where there was high grip and all the rest of it, you could get passing.
Well, all
done.
The passing was done out of the last turn for turn one, wasn't it? It
That's
wasn't
right.
really
it wasn't
pulling
diving.
Out
again.
What actually broke on your car?
Yeah.
Shock bolt.
The bolt.
So a lot of people say, didn't come loose. A bolt's not coming loose after 151 laps. Yeah. So, yeah, we think it's a bolt failure.
I couldn't believe it because he was doing it easy.
Oh, mate, we were literally, we just said, mate, there's a gap. You've got a gap up to the next bunch of lap cars. You've got a huge gap behind Jamie. No pressure. Just
I was listening
cruise,
in on the
enjoy.
Cans and they said, 17's the next car. And I heard him go,
can I pass
I want to get him. No.
It was that is not our objective for this race.
But
then he comes back, but I'd very much like to do it.
Yeah, that was very good. I like that.
So, yeah, I mean, never got the chance.
That's so disappointing, man. Seriously disappointing.
I mean, get that close. But
if you won that race, would you have won the endurance
cup? No, 1 point.
Really?
1 point.
Really?
Yeah. So Shane's DNF effectively on Saturday night.
Oh, yeah.
Cost us those points. Yeah.
I mean, you still came second, though.
Yeah, I only read that this morning. I don't even know where we finished the race. So I didn't. And then I read something this morning. Oh, we still finished second. Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
But being the last Sandown 500 too, I mean, you've won it before, but for Shane, I think that would have been, he did genuinely seem pretty disappointed.
Yeah, well, he hasn't won it.
Yeah, exactly.
Shippy, our engineer, he hadn't won it.
Yeah.
He literally told me 3 or 4 laps before the failure, he goes, man, I haven't won this race.
Yeah.
And he was, just gutted. Like the whole 97 side of the garage, like seriously emotional. Like it meant a lot to the boys. And
you can see everyone in the garage.
And it's sort of, it's a bit of a shit sandwich because then the other side of the garage is one. And fair play, but like they're all up and as they should be, and our side's like, oh man.
Just crushed.
It's the same as the awkward split screen when two drivers and one team are going for pole in a shootout, and one guy's on provisional pole, and then the other guy gets it.
Is that like when Fab was on provisional pole, and they're a bit nervous? Oh, he might end up on pole.
What are we going to do? Well, we all know what they do.
We talk about that all the time.
Now, getting into that, let's get into what's been happening, AVL. I mean, what's the news around the traps?
It was a pretty newsy weekend, I'll tell you that. There was plenty going on. We've had a bit of driver movement stuff to start off. Scotty Pye off to Team 18.
Mm-hmm.
So him and Frosty together. That was largely expected.
Yeah,
that's where
it
goes. Simona's leaving the championship, at least in a full-time capacity.
That's disappointing, isn't it? I mean, she's been out here for 3 years.
Yeah.
I actually would have liked to have seen her have a crack at another team.
Yeah, in another car would have been interesting to see how she went.
Well, the Triple Eight deal almost happened. It sort of fell over at the last minute for this year. So, look, it's disappointing. I think she's going to end up with a Porsche GT drive of some kind. That seems to be sort of... She's got a Formula E development drive locked in.
That's
but I think
not a bad backup gig, is it?
Works out all right, doesn't it, really? But, look, it's a shame, I think, in other circumstances. Obviously, that the Nissans just haven't been going great for the last couple of years. They're actually coming...
Last couple of races,
at the moment,
so it's all the work Caruso did over the years.
Since he left.
They're definitely faster in a straight line.
They've got nothing wrong in a straight line.
Do they? They were bloody brilliant up the back straight. But no, it is. It is disappointing to see her go. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't look like we'll have a female on the grid next year. Which I think it's been a great thing for the sport. To be honest, there's definitely been a lot of chat, and we want people talking about our sport more and having that female interest. I mean, Garth, you would know. Leanne's been a...
100%. Oh, mate, my daughter, she knows 100% who Simona is and knows her car, and she's 8 years old. So, you know, creating a fan base from a very early age it's for everyone. So, I think it's a shame to not have... a real strong female driver in the category, which she certainly has the credentials to do it. It never really happened here in Australia, but certainly had all the credentials before she started.
Leanne?
Do you reckon she'll be back in Enduros, Simona?
Oh, I don't know. She
did you ask?
Maybe. I haven't asked yet, but she could be. She'd be a decent pickup for an Enduro driver, for sure. Yeah. You know, just with that, regardless of where she's been sort of sitting in the field, that relevant experience pays off massively. There you go.
Could be a contender.
There you go.
Speak of credentials.
Yeah. She's, everyone wants it now. Yeah. There's even people dropping out of the series just to get this.
People dropping out.
Full time to go.
That's true.
Yeah. We've created a monster, haven't we?
Yep. Unfortunately, Mike Raymond passed away.
That was sad news. I think you heard Neil Crompton was really emotional about that when the news sort of broke on Friday. On Thursday, it sort of started to come through. Very sad news. Obviously, for all of us, that would have been the first voice that we heard when we started watching motorsport as kids, you know. So, and it wasn't just what he did behind the microphone. He was a big, influential player. In Australian motorsport.
Big mover and shaker. Real big mover. I think a lot of young'uns, like you probably wouldn't appreciate how much he did, like in the mid-90s, to create what we have, the foundation of what we have today. He was a massive mover and shaker and all that sort of stuff. In the initial Tiga, before Avesco was started, and with his connections at Channel 7 and all the rest of it, he was right in the middle of creating all those technical regs to what was original V8 supercar.
He was a promoter at heart. That's really what he was. He was a speedway promoter. So his passion was his skill set was building something and creating excitement. So he was a big player behind the V8 era. You know,
and then that whole giving everyone a bit of a name and like the enforcer and this
the
and
endorser.
That. Yeah, no, he was.
What was your name?
Mike wasn't involved when I started. He wasn't involved. He was out.
I think 94 or 95 was kind of the end of his active career.
I think when it went left seven. I think it'll be about when it left seven went to 10 the first time, which was I think 97. Yeah. So. But he, because of the promoter thing, he understood that now the drivers were starting to become, you know, the cars were always the Holden versus Ford, rah, rah, rah. They were always the stars. But then he sort of was the initial guy to sort of say, hang on a minute, the drivers are starting to become the personalities, like Tricky Dicky Johnson and Peter Perfect Brock and Larrick and Larry Perkins and the baby-faced assassin Glennis.
That was
all him. It was all him creating all that stuff. And now, today, they understand that drivers, you know, talk about characters.
Yeah. We don't really have many personalities now, though.
No, it's sanitized a little bit. Because there's no...
What do they call you, Dave? The clown?
The wanker?
Yeah.
The wanker Reynolds? I don't know.
But there's no promoter on TV.
There's no one with that promoter background walking around the paddock in a white shirt. You know, that needs to understand that sort of stuff. I think we could do well to have another Mike Raymond involved in our sport.
Who could fill that role then?
Oh man, I think it has to come from outside.
Yeah,
it has to come from outside. Yeah, someone from the WWE something like that.
Yeah. We need a bit of WWE, a bit of
UFC, whatever it is. What's the latest thing? You know that.
Yeah, I love UFC.
Yeah, that's your wheelhouse there.
Well, let's get into it, boys. Sandown 500, the biggest news that broke over the weekend. Well, the actually, the second biggest news.
Besides the Co-Driver Cup.
Exactly. Yes. Second to the Co-Driver Cup. But only just. And we spoke about this straight after Bathurst.
We did.
We called it out.
For the big
day.
Well,
actually, that was before even that.
Was it?
Yeah, the big donk for the big day. Maybe they took that quite literally that you needed the big donk. But DJ Arpensky got they basically found guilty of having an illegal engine part in the car, which was used in qualifying when he was, you know, fastest virtually all day Thursday, Friday. And in the shootout.
And Saturday, yeah.
Go through it, AVL. I mean, it was funny because on Sunday, you know, everyone was just in race mode, weren't we? Yeah. No one's really...
But when that news broke, how'd you feel?
Honestly. I was right. I felt, yeah, I called it. I said, yeah,
but you get,
called
it. You're actually angry, aren't you? You're angry that there's another thing you have to deal with. Another like, blemish against Bathurst. It just sucked. Yeah. It just...
It's disappointing for the sport.
It's just
absolutely
so disappointing. It is
sport.
Seriously disappointing.
It's...
Well, you guys ran second, and I know they didn't race with that engine, but they started on pole. And then
you have to. If I look at it, if you fail to qualify the race, you failed the race.
Well, I mean,
I think that's...
that was found. The engine that they used in qualifying was found to be outside the tolerances allowed, therefore illegal. Therefore, if they found that Saturday afternoon, you would have put to the rear of the grid. Yeah. You're not excluded from the event, but you're put to the rear of the grid, okay? For any technical infringement, if the car comes in a kilo underweight, you're put to the rear of the grid, okay?
Yep. So definitely.
So that aspect, I think, they're never going to pull an engine, strip an engine, understand the tolerances, and kick you out Saturday night. So I think the whole of pit lane gets that. The fact that there was an engine change happening Saturday night in that car, which they had to ask permission for...
After just breaking the lap record.
I think it started to get a bit smelly.
Yes,
all the teams
did.
Up and down pit lane. There was only one car that changed engines Saturday night. You have to ask permission to do it. And we were told it was because they found something in the data at the time that, we need to change the engine because we found something in the data, blah, blah, blah. And then, so that engine, all the engines are sealed. Doesn't matter if it was in your car, my car,
absolutely,
17 car. They're all sealed.
Except,
but they're not measured. So I think a lot of the punters out there think that, the engines are measured, then they're sealed and put in the car, and therefore they're all legal. No.
It's the other way around.
The engine builders build the engines to the tolerances that they think and making sure that they think they're legal. The engines are then sealed. And then if the category decides... We're gonna measure
that's a great
AVL's
point.
Engine.
Yep.
Then we're gonna take the engine out, break that seal. The seal means that the team hasn't tampered with the engine since it's been sealed, and then we'll take it away and measure it.
Yep.
And then so that's what's happened in this instance. It was taken away and measured. It was measured a couple of times, from what I understand.
that's the word.
And,
in the pit
and
line.
Didn't make tolerance. Therefore, it's illegal.
Well,
what do you do though? What do you do
if that was Saturday? That's if that the was, tricky part.
If that was Sunday night, that race is gone.
So do we do it the other way then? Do we do it the other way? You send your engine up there. I mean, arguably next year the engines are going to go for 7,500 kilometres, so they're going to be in the car for quite a long period of time. Do you send your engines up there? They're measured, they're checked, then they're sent back to you sealed. I mean, I know it's a lot more, but it avoids. It avoids just any instance where you...
Just don't break the rules.
It's pretty simple.
So, wait. If they didn't change the engine, what would have happened?
Well, they changed the engine because they knew they had to. I think at the end of the day,
But if they didn't...
They changed the engine because they knew they had
to. So they've blatantly cheated.
No, I don't know it was blatant. I don't think you can say it was blatant.
But
they,
how do
they
you know
have
then?
Said in the, they have said in their release since that...
What is it?
Yeah. It was within tolerance when it left the workshop. And then it was outside of tolerance after Saturday. So I don't know how they changed tolerance in the truck, but it's obviously changed tolerance.
Well,
and then they've also said that there was no advantage from how far out of tolerance they were. So if there's no advantage from how far out of tolerance they were...
Why have a tolerance?
No, there's got to be a tolerance. There's got to be a line.
Yeah.
But why be so close to that tolerance? If
well,
there's
that's,
no
that's
advantage
what I mean.
Being this... And this is the valve lift in the engine.
Yeah.
If there's no advantage in being that
close
far over the tolerance, like they're saying a very small amount, then why be so close to that tolerance line? You, if there's no disadvantage by having yourself a safe margin under the tolerance line.
Well, these are good questions. Let's ring somebody that builds engines.
All right, let's ring.
And get an actual answer on, you know, what they've been done for and what it does effectively.
Who are you ringing?
I'm calling WAS308. He's the current...
WAS308. Is that his number plate?
He's the world burnout champion.
That's his number plate. He's a world burnout champion.
World burnout champion.
Is it Dead Set WAS308?
Yeah. WAS308. WAS308, what's up?
Oh, it's Reynolds. How you going?
I'm right. You're on Below the Bonnet, pal. You're live. What's going on?
Oh, just doing stuff. That's about it.
Doing stuff.
Building engines.
Building engines to tolerances, I hope.
Oh, well within.
You're a legend. I think Caruso's got a couple of questions he wants to fire at you. So you actually work for Walkinshaw Performance, and you build...
Walkinshaw Racing, yep.
And you build...
engines?
Six engines, don't you? For for cars with six engines.
So you've been doing it for a while, Woz, obviously. This isn't your first rodeo on the weekend.
Definitely not my first rodeo, that's for sure.
Mate,
2008 was my first year in the supercars.
Oh, okay, yeah. That's when I started supercars.
I reckon I did your engines back at GRM back in the day.
Oh, they were good. They were very good.
Caruso would have over.
Oh, yeah, yes, once you got the Walkinshaw engines, they were good.
I think Gypsy would have kept an eye on you for those over.
That was, obviously, on the weekend, there was a car that got pinned for illegal engine at Bathurst, and we just wanted to ask you, can you explain to us from an engine builder's perspective, you know, what it did and what effectively it can do to, you know, why the rule is there effectively?
Yeah, well, basically the category some years ago put in a control camshaft and a particular lobe. So the maximum lift you can effectively run is 710 thou, and depending on the rock ratio and stuff like that, that's what allows you to get the peak lift. But I know at Walkinshaw we're a little bit conservative and well under that figure. Obviously, these guys are taking the chance and they build their engines very close to the limit. It's basically in effect by moving it close to the limit, you're opening the valve further, so you're allowing more cylinder filling. So every time you can get more charge into the cylinder, you're going to try and make more power in effect.
By charge, you mean more air, more fuel?
Yeah, basically. If you can fill that cylinder with more air, you know, the chances are you're going to make more power.
And, okay. And how likely are they to change tolerance once you've built them?
What's that again, sorry?
Or like when you build an engine and you obviously build it to, you know, the spec you want to build it to and have it within that tolerance, how likely do they move? Have you ever seen one move, like from your experience?
No, basically all the checks are done at zero lash, so I wouldn't expect them to move at all, to be honest.
So was
unless
after...
Unless something's worn out.
Hey, was it Scarf, mate? Hey...
Go on.
So from a fresh-built engine, you know, brand new, go and do 2,000 Ks, bring it back. Do you see no noticeable measurement change on that tolerance?
Providing there's no wear in the valve train, I wouldn't expect any movement.
Yeah. Okay.
So wear in the valve train, you mean over revs?
Oh, yeah, basically, whether it's been a component failure, like a lobe started to fail, or, you know, just anything else in the valve train that can cause anything like that. Okay. But you expect it to decrease, I would have thought, with valve train wear. But, stranger things have happened, so I'm not going to say that's 100% the issue. Or,
but
I'm going
to try and answer the question pretty politically and not stand on my feet.
Well, it's AVL here. The team, when they changed that engine on the Saturday at Bathurst, they talked about having seen something in the data that they didn't like, and that's why they swapped that engine out. Do you have any understanding of what they may have seen that would have suggested that something wasn't right with that unit?
To be honest, no idea. There's, you know, dozens of things in an engine that you may see in the data that may cause concerns, or you may want to change the engine. So, yeah, without seeing the data, it's probably pretty hard to answer. And we all see different things, and you know, it's obviously you get nervous before a big race, and that's why we carry spares. You put them in case you need them. You don't want to have that risk in front of you. That's why we carry spares. But without looking at the data and seeing exactly what was presented with them, it's probably fair for me to comment. Really,
would you be able to see the lift? I don't know. I mean, you in the data. Would you be able to see that type of problem, or
Oh, no, I don't think so, no.
Okay.
Basically, on the daily, you know, depending if you overheated the thing, you might be like, oh, I better change that thing, or things ran low on oil pressure, you'd be like, oh, I'll definitely change it, but nah, definitely nothing with the camshaft, that's for sure.
Oh, well, thanks for your time today, Woz. It's good to get an understanding, not just for us, but obviously everyone listening in and watching in. It's appreciate your time. And
yeah, thanks, Woz. You're a superstar.
Yep.
Get back to building the engine for the HQ, Woz.
The HQ.
Your world burnout champion.
You need to come and
drive
one day.
No one's as good at burnouts as you are, mate. No one's as good at burnouts as you are, mate.
GT only drives if he pays.
All right.
Thanks, mate.
See you, Woz.
See you, Woz.
All right. Catch you later, guys. See ya.
What a legend.
What a legend.
Yeah, he's a great guy.
But it's good insight because I'm not an engine expert. Probably Garth, you're probably the most mechanically minded out of all of us sitting here, so you probably have a better understanding.
Hang on a second. I worked at GRM for a couple of years.
You ran your own Formula 3 car as well, remember? You're basically an engineer.
That's pretty like clear cut.
Well, it's interesting that he said that you probably, well, from his experience, you're not going to be able to see. Yeah, it's going to get less if it's wearing rather than go the opposite way.
And so, also that the tolerance thing, like he's saying, they leave a reasonable margin on the underside.
I should really ring him back and say don't.
hey, mate. I mean, having driven the Walkinshaw engine, you use it now. They've got good power. There's no problem.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're always saying that like that's an area where you guys are pretty well equipped.
We've always got good power, good economy.
Yeah, good economy they're known for as well.
Yeah.
So how do you deal? So I think Garth touched on it before. It's a really tricky situation to say, how do you deal with this? Because,
I don't think getting a penalty at Sandown was going to cut it.
No, that was unfair. That was unfair to put him at the
unfair.
That did not make sense at all. One way whatsoever.
I think you're all right. That's the for Scott that and Alex and everyone on car 17. That's not the right penalty. Two race meetings go by and you're starting the race last. And the weird thing was, obviously they knew about it. Everyone knew about it before the Sunday. Why it took to the Sunday to come out is another interesting thing, because it could have just been dealt with before and then they knew where they stood. You know, I don't understand why at that event they had to start last, because I don't think that's fair on him or anyone in the team.
Or the work they'd done that weekend.
It's a tricky one. So I genuinely feel sorry for Scott through all of this. And I know you guys will slam me for that, but at the end of the day, he's not on the strategy wall telling anybody to go fast or slow behind the safety car. He's not in the engine room going, well, we'll push the limit here, or maybe we can do this, or he's nothing to, all he's doing is driving the car.
Just driving the car really well.
But the other side of the argument is, it's a team sport. At the end of the day...
I understand that.
But when you're driving a race car, if the team have broken the rule, it's
you get penalised as well. I get that. What I'm saying is that
it's a team sport, but Scott's the one that yesterday had to stand there with me and five other journos around him asking him how it feels to win the championship on a day where you got penalised for having an illegal engine. That's a tough thing to swallow, right? And he has to deal with that.
I
genuinely feel sorry for him for having to deal with that, because he's a Bathurst winner and a champion. That's how it's gone down, and he's got all this other stuff swirling around that he has to deal with at exactly the same time. What an unfortunate way to seal the championship on that same day, you know?
Yeah, well, you can see there was no celebrations around.
No, that's right. So that's, but also when you're talking about technical things, for me, you have to have a line, and it doesn't matter if you're a quarter of an inch over it or if you're a meter over it. You've just got to have a line.
That's why there has to be a line. Doesn't matter what the numbers are. That's the line.
Yeah.
So it's like saying, well, the cars weigh 1,250 kilos.
Yeah.
You come in at 1,249.
Yeah. You're done.
Too bad. Yeah. Oh, but it's only 1 kilo. Yeah. Doesn't matter. Too bad.
Yeah. And performance advantage or not, to me, is entirely irrelevant.
That's irrelevant.
It really doesn't matter. The engine was illegal, right?
But what's the penalty?
That's the question. Because you can't, I don't know that. If you took a straw poll up and down pit lane, most people in most garages would say you have to take the win away. But it's so hard because you
wouldn't. I don't think you can.
Yeah, that's right. I think if
that's the Sunday engine, it's easy.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
Easy.
So precisely.
You're no longer the Bathurst 1000 champions. Yeah, that's easy.
But because of all this grey area.
But because it's Saturday, it makes it hard.
Mm-hmm. So do you give him a penalty?
I mean, I think on the back of...
At Bathurst, like... Do you just add.
They can't, mate. They didn't use that engine in the race.
Yeah, no, but that's, you shouldn't have started from pole.
You shouldn't have started from pole.
Like, I started 22nd. It took me 100 laps to get to
17th. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You can't say, oh, if he started 25th, you can't say, well, he wouldn't have won the race because you don't know.
You don't know, exactly.
Yeah, but the hard thing is, GT, and this is where everyone's pushing the boundaries. That whole event now is just constantly.
The asterisk's got bigger.
The asterisk, it's a double asterisk. It's amazing. Like that whole event, and it's our biggest. It's our marquee event. Even Ryan Walkinshaw came out and said, you know, it's unfair on the fans. And 100%
exactly right.
It is. It's unfair
exactly
on everyone involved. Everyone that loves the sport. Everyone that built that sport back in the day, like Mike Raymond. All those people that built this. This is it. That's the joint. So what? Effectively, where it's disappointing is. It's hard to apply a rule, but I think, you know what it's like. How tough is it you guys had to do on the weekend? If you had started on pole, where do you think you guys would have been by the end of the race on Sunday?
You don't know.
Do you know what I mean?
Your race is different, though.
It's a different race. Otherwise, you wouldn't qualify.
Strategy.
I don't know what we do. So getting back to what the penalty should be, it's a team sport. It's got to be team points. And everyone's saying, well, you're saying that because you're a Red Bull and you're second in the team. But it's a team thing. The teams involved with the engine and all the rest of it. It's got to be team points.
It's got to be both. It has to be.
Yeah,
I don't understand how you can cop the penalty.
I don't know how you can apply a sporting penalty to the car so far after the event.
Yeah,
that's the problem. If it was on the day, mate, it's easy. It's clear cut.
Yeah, but these things you just can't do it on the day.
No, and that's the problem with the engine thing.
You can't check it on the Saturday night.
That's the problem with the whole one car changing engine on Saturday night, and we can all sit here and speculate.
But everyone would
going into Saturday.
But wouldn't you cop starting Bathurst on pole if you knew it was going to be 30 grand? And you got to start the next.
The money is irrelevant.
It's the same as the 150 grand fine on for
Roger
the race.
Penske bought the IndyCar Series and the Indianapolis Motor Speedway like a week after getting that fine. The money is irrelevant, but
what I'm saying, this isn't a crack at them.
No, the money thing.
What I'm saying is. The 30 grand, then, why wouldn't you take it, the punt, and just go, well, all right, we're going to run it on the edge and make sure we qualify in the shootout and get on pole.
That's a good idea.
And be like, yep, okay, we're going to yank that engine. What are they going to say? All I'm saying is we're creating scenarios where people will take it to the edge. They will do it.
If they've got the money and the resource, they can.
Why not? That's all I'm saying. People will do it. And everyone thinks, well, you know.
Do you thinking the deterrents aren't strong enough at the moment?
I think we've got to be very heavy. I mean, you see it in other sports, even NASCAR. Don't they wipe people?
Yep.
Like, you can't come back and race next weekend, or your crew chief can't be. We need to have heavier penalties.
Melbourne Storm got rubbed out for the next 2 years. Didn't they? They got wooden spoon for the next 2 years.
Well, they didn't win those premierships.
No, they took their premierships away. So...
That's all I'm saying. If people are going to break the rules, then I think we've got to have penalties applied. So you're not on the fine.
Suitable deterrence and financial deterrence aren't strong enough. Doesn't matter if it's Roger Penske, Roland Dane, Gary Rogers. It doesn't matter because the teams have got some money.
Yeah,
and the teams at the front was to say, well. We'll happily take a financial fine over a sporting fine.
Yep.
So there's got to be sporting fines. It's got to be points. It's got to be, you know, back of the grid, wipe your points for the year. It's got to be
reputation-based.
Yeah. Like, I mean...
Because they've brought this... Effectively, it brings the sport into disrepute.
Oh, well, here we are Monday morning after Sandown 500 talking about something that happened four weeks ago.
On the Saturday.
So I still think a year at the back of pit lane would have.
Yeah, I agree.
That would have sent a really strong message as well. And that's oversimplifying the application of penalties because there's sporting codes and there's certain regulations in which it's not as simple as just going, well, too bad, we're going to take all your points away. But if you wanted to just sit down and go, what would be a real deterrent? If you want to talk about deterrence, that would be a deterrent.
Yeah, 100%.
Because that sends a very strong message.
That penalty is not just for here and now.
That's for 14 race weekends next year.
And that reminds you every time you walk into the track, oh, I've got to go to that end of pit lane.
But that's what I'm saying. It's not just about this reason.
That's exactly what it is. But it's a constant.
That's all I'm saying. It's not just about them and the penalty they should get. It's so anyone else doesn't think about, okay, we're going to push it here.
Because at the moment, you, you, looking at the surface.
No penalties, just keep pushing the limits.
Yeah. Maybe that's what it. So you know, we talk about qualifying engines in the old days of, you know, being hand grenade engines, but maybe it becomes that your qualifying engine is just one that's pushing every tolerance to the very end, and you roll the dice. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but that's sort of what we're suggesting it might happen.
Rules maybe change next year today. I mean, there was talk about teams wanting. Basically, I think it works next year is that. Engines get allocated to the car.
Yeah.
So you got three engines, and those engines are allocated to the car. So those,
like F1.
The Ks have to be, those Ks have to be done in that car. So you can't have an engine do 6,500 kilometres in one car and go, oh, this is getting close.
We'll give it to the number two driver.
To another car for the last 500
Ks. Who'll end up with those engines? No,
there was a genuine push from teams to allow, the team can have a bank of engines.
Oh, wow. That's not cool.
So the engine rules are significantly different, and we won't go into that now, but the engine rules next year are significantly different. So I don't think you'll see teams going as close to the limits or the thresholds because the engines are going to have to go effectively double the distance.
And the thing
now.
I will say, it's great that supercars have done something about it because we have heard of in the past that some things maybe, you know, everyone gets a bit of a slap on the wrist and people move on, but we need, if the more strength they show, the better
our series becomes.
Yeah, exactly.
And the more the people want to play in it.
Well done to them. Yeah. Because it would have been a hard decision, no doubt, as well.
People also have to know that listening to this, these are just our opinions. They're not gospel. We're just talking rubbish about, you know, not rubbish. We're just coming up with ideas and possibilities and it's not going to happen.
We're as much part of the sport as everyone else, aren't we? We're just
talking it. So you can't just hammer us going, you know, Reynolds said that. Tander said they should strip his win. It's nothing
about that. No. I don't think they need. Yeah, exactly. I mean, you've got to be balanced with it all. And, you know, 50% of your listeners are going to be from the blue side and they're going to say, we're all talking junk. Yep. 50% of your listeners are from the red side. They're all going to say, they needed to go harder.
There's no one on the Nissan side.
How would you feel?
Sorry.
How would you feel if you
were in the cracks.
Back in 6 years.
How would you feel if you were in car 17's position? After all that stuff's happened,
It'd be hard. Absolutely, be hard.
Would you want to give the trophy back and say, "Hey, we should come back again next year"?
No, of course not.
You still would.
I don't think Scott should. Because the engine that they used on Sunday is fine.
Yeah,
there's no arguing that.
Yeah, both engines got checked.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, well, that's good.
But they've done, I mean, he's lost his lap record.
That is something.
He's lost his no longer a Bathurst pole winner for 2019. Yeah.
That's Chaz's first pole in a top 10 shootout.
But he doesn't actually get it.
And you know what it's like? That we've spoken about it many times. Like, Bathurst shootout is the shootout. I mean, he's missed out. And the team, I mean,
all the news stories, all the paper.
All that. That's a big deal. So I reckon this is one of the trickiest applications of penalty. And I don't think the penalty on Sunday at Sandown, I thought that was really average.
I don't get that.
But what else do they do? And I think the general consensus is team's points.
Yep.
It's been a really tricky year, hasn't it? It's been a tricky year.
I think so. I still think that there is a penalty in how Scott would be feeling. And imagine when he got sat down on Sunday morning and told what happened. Hmm. That would have sucked.
He would have known about it for a while.
No, they would have known for a while. That was bubbling for a while. So they'd know.
It would have hurt to know that, particularly with everything that had already happened. That would have really sucked.
Now, speaking of the team's championship, GT, it's bloody close. 116 points between first and second. Do you reckon your team can bridge it at Newcastle? Because their cars at the moment,
flying. Yeah, absolutely.
You guys are looking fast.
Yeah, the cars, like, are good.
Let's just say too quick.
Mustang win at the start of the year?
Yeah, it's flipped, hasn't it?
I'm pretty sure one car at the start of the year won a lot of races. It was clearly just the co-drivers over this last three events, by the way.
Yeah, well, you've added some points there.
For once in that team, like, they've done a very good job at getting the...
They dominated the last decade.
When you look at, like, yourself, Lowndes and Wincup, you are the three most winning drivers out of the sport's history. Like, they were going to be at one of the hardest combinations or hardest teams to beat in that three races.
Yeah.
Like, it's...
I think, on that, before we get to Newcastle, I think what having Craig and myself in the team enables Jamie and Shane to know that they can just fully concentrate on making the car as fast as it can go, knowing that they don't have to allocate X amount of time or laps in the sessions for the co-drivers to get up to speed.
Yes.
Because they're confident, even if we only do three laps before. I mean, on Thursday at Bathurst, I was after practice one, I was like, I'm comfortable. I can pretty much just go and do the race now.
Yeah.
So then, you know, they're comfortable. We can just spend as much time as we want getting the cars right. So they know that when Craig and I jump back in the car, we're just going to be we're going to be close to what they are capable of doing.
Well, let's get into that, because I did want to ask you. I mean, we've both gone from being main series. You obviously did it for a very long time successfully, to now co-driver role. It is a different role, isn't it?
Yep.
I mean, people, you don't turn up with this exact same mindset. And we've been asked constantly, you know, I mean, particularly the media say, oh, do you feel like there's so much pressure? The co-drivers have, the standards higher.
What do you do different?
But I mean, my opinion, you heard this at Gold Coast, because we got asked it in the press conference on Friday. It is very light duties, in my opinion, and that's coming from where we've been and so competitive, and you've been doing it at the top level every week in, week out, and you come back, you know, you're with a driver that is going to qualify well and do all those things, worry about making the cars fast. You can just sit back. Yeah. I mean, is that how you feel?
Yeah, you focus. You can just focus on your own performance and not have to worry so much about the car performance. You're just focusing on your own, how you're driving the car and things like that. And where I probably... And so, yes, I think it's weirdly much lower stress.
Yeah.
But what I struggled with in particularly the first stint at Bathurst and the Saturday race at the Gold Coast was just how hard to push. Like, how hard do I push? Yeah. How much risk do I take in this first...
It's not my car.
It's not my car. It's not my championship.
Because it's not our role,
is it? Then, that's not exactly. It's not our role. Our role is to, if there's an opportunity to make a place, take the place, but don't take any risk. So I really struggled with how much risk do I take in this early phase of the race.
And then that'd be hard for you, because your whole life has been about...
It's all about just maximising everything, everything. So I really struggled with that. And I actually changed before Sandown, like after the Gold Coast, I was pretty flat with my own performance. I mean, it's weird, we were first on Sunday and second on Saturday, but I was really thought that I'd didn't deliver the way I should have. So I completely changed my mindset for Sandown. It was like, nah, this is just back to maximum attack and just drive it like
just
it's
go
my
back to
drive
what you
it
know.
Like it's my own car.
Yeah. Yep. But I think we can measure those when you got to push and when you don't. I mean, that's the thing I explained to Cam. I mean, you know, we spoke about it. It's when the car's when the car's not exactly there, we can measure those. Okay, this is not the time to push.
And
stick it, you know, up against the fence and bend this or have a crack here. Like, you can actually just go, righto, it's 90% right now. When the car's good again, or, you know, when we tune it up, then you can go back. Where I think that's where the struggle is. So instead of being 10 tenths all the time.
Oh, yeah. You're always actually driving with margin.
Yeah.
Always driving with margin.
Exactly.
Under the tolerance, mate. Under the tolerance.
So I think one of the things we've seen over this, the big advantage to having guys like you and your team, and we saw you do a double stint on the Gold Coast. We saw you go like 20 laps over the minimum. It's just the flexibility you guys are giving teams.
So much more.
Yeah, because you went much longer than you needed to.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't get paid any extra for that either. No.
You don't get paid to adjust the inward.
But also, like, when you're coming up against like less experienced people, you know you've got an edge on them. And also,
you really do. No,
you've
got experience on them. But, I mean, you guys, you remember racing kids, guys like Will Brown, Bryce Fullwood, all these young kids that...
Yeah, but they'll be shitting themselves going,
they've got to back themselves, mate. That can't go on forever. So they've got to back themselves and go, at some point, we've got to be better than these guys.
And let's be honest, the co-drivers, a lot of them are auditioning to try to get a main seat.
Oh, you know,
it's tough. But you know what I mean? And that, you know, there's kids out there trying to prove themselves. Yep. And we saw a lot of that over the last three events. So you've got one end of the spectrum where people have proved themselves and everyone knows, okay, well, that's where they are and they're good enough and what have you, seen all that. And these kids are trying to get a main seat, you know, for next year or in the future. Mm. So, it's a good mix.
Interesting dynamic. It is.
Well, like, we were having a chuckle on in the co-driver race when Will Brown and Bryce Fullwood were racing each other. It's basically the Walkinshaw Cup. Yeah. It's a couple of guys. a couple of guys are very much in the frame for the second seat at Walkinshaw's. And they were racing each other, you know. So that's and Thomas Randall, he's still in the mix to land somewhere. So there are guys that were out there that did definitely have a bit to prove on the weekend. I've got another question for you guys. So what would you take? You've got Plum co-driver roles. Yep. How does that stack up against if you were, you know, driving maybe in a not so competitive package on a full time basis? Would you still rather be full time?
He's probably the perfect person to ask.
I think he's the perfect person to ask because he's.
Oh, well, you both drove
for two different teams this year.
I did. I mean, they're two different mindsets. You're going to an event, okay, we can win here.
Yeah.
To, okay, let's work on the package and, you know, let's try to get in the 10 and make opportunities. It's difficult because a lot of the teams that know they're not going there to win would like to win. It's not that they're not trying to.
Sure.
But you've got to be realistic, you know. You know where you stand in the scheme of things and which team you're at and what your opportunities are. I mean, it's a hard one because I'd like to be racing nearly every weekend.
Yeah.
But, I don't know. I mean...
Oh, for me, it's simple. It's been interesting. The phone's rung a couple of times over the last 3 or 4 weeks and...
For a full-time seat.
Yeah, and a lot of people have asked since what happened with me in January and then, well, you're going to try and get back in full-time in 2020. And I said then, I'd only do it if I was in a car that I knew was really capable of results because, I mean, it's 21 years. I've got myself into a position now with 888 that I've got a car that I know when we go to the track, every time we go to the track, we're a chance to win the race.
Yeah.
And it's been a long time for me since I've been in that situation. So why would I put myself back in the situation where you're going to do exactly what you're describing, talking about developing a team, developing a car, building a culture within the organisation, going through all that process again? I mean, it's time for someone else to do that.
It drains you.
Yeah, it does. It's it drains you. It absolutely drains you. And you've done a really good job at that at Erebus, building a team that's come from nowhere to now a genuine contender.
It's a team effort, though.
Yeah,
it's not just down to one person, it's down to everyone.
But a lot of the time, the driver ends up being the centre point of all that stuff.
Yeah,
and the energy that the driver brings to the garage, if it's a positive energy, then you can flourish. If it's a negative energy, it's really, really hard to develop a culture.
If I look at myself, this year I probably could do a better job at that, like with all the other stuff that's going on, with all the stuff with the Mustang or Bathurst stuff, this and that and the other. I've actually probably lost sight of my own goals
doing your job
and trying to like rally my troops around me in a nice positive frame of
mind. It's hard when
I've forgot to focus on yourself.
I will say that when you're trying to talk
about all these other battles, everyone's ringing me about. I'm like, I just want to get back to AVL.
I think when you're in a team and you know everyone's going there to try to win, but when there's things happening within the sport, and you think I'm doing the best job I can, we're doing the best job we can.
Yeah.
And then you're finding out, oh, how are we going to beat that team if they're doing this, or how are we going to beat that team? You know what I mean? Like you're so focused in your own little world that you know, that's what you're thinking about. Okay, how are we going to win next event? And if you think that someone has an advantage that you can't beat,
it actually gets to everyone,
not just you, it gets to the mechanics, the engineers.
Yeah, that's why as a driver you've got to just, mate, I've just got to go to the track. If I think my car's good enough for sixth, I've got to make sure
it's six.
I'm at least six, if not try and steal a fifth.
But I don't know
there's many drivers that do that now.
Yeah, I know.
It doesn't feel like
that's a real skill that you need to... Mm. And I think it's experience that develops that, because when you're young, you think it doesn't matter what car you're driving, you think every time we go on the track, I'm going to win the race.
Yeah.
Mm. But in reality, you can't. You know, not everyone's going to win the race. I mean, there's 25 cars in the race. There's going to be 24 disappointed people. So you've got to be realistic about, and that's sort of at my time at GRM, we weren't a car that was capable of winning races, but we were a car, when we got that right, we were a top five car. When we really got it right, we could steal a podium. Mm. So that's when you knew that on a weekend where, hey, the car's in the window this weekend, we can be top five.
Yep.
You had to make sure as a driver, you did everything you can to make sure.
You were
sure
ready, yeah, for that opportunity.
To maximise that opportunity. And then if you really did a good job, you stole a podium.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, you develop that skill over your career. And I think... That's why I think a lot of people, young guys coming out of Super 2 into main game, go, geez, it's such a big gap from Super 2 up to the main series, is because drivers in the main series are thinking like that. So they're thinking, oh, this is my opportunity to maximise this weekend. I'm maximising. Not saying that you don't try every weekend, but you've got to make sure you, as the cog in the wheel of the race team, are as strong as you can be when the opportunity arises. Whereas, and then so then everyone's doing that in their garages up and down pit lane. And then you've got these new guys coming out of Super 2 going, holy smokes, I used to win everything in Super 2. Now I'm running 25th. Like, it's that's you've got to keep developing yourself as an athlete and as a driver.
So are you saying that you're full time?
Mate, unless RD's running a third car next year for me. Yeah, I don't see any desire to come back. If I was in a car that was capable of being top three, top five every weekend, then yes, you'd consider it. But the reality of...
Is it hard knowing that you've got the skill to win?
No, but I mean, I think the reality of someone hiring a 42-year-old to go back into that environment is very slim. I mean, I was... whilst yesterday's race result was obviously disappointing, I was really satisfied with my performance in the first half of the race because...
You set up that.
I can't imagine.
Well, no, it's just from a personal execution point of view. There was a role that I had to do, and I achieved that to the best that I could, probably exceeded a little bit. So just walking away, even though the race result sucked, walking away knowing, well, your performance was exactly what you needed to do in that time and place in that environment. So that's satisfying. And I put my head on a pillow last night knowing that, you can still get the job done, whereas a lot of people out there probably thought that I would sort of gone over the peak a little.
There seems to be
that's funny. That is a typical thing in motorsport, though. As soon as you're not in a car that can win,
he's forgotten how to drive.
They haven't shown any promise. Get rid of them. Get someone else in there. It's not as easy just plugging in a spacer in there.
You've got a good chance of continuity where you are as well, because Shane loves that team. He's already said that, you know, when his deal comes up at the end of next year, he'll try and do another one.
Yep.
You guys are almost the same height.
Yep.
Similar. You seem to have worked really, really well this year together. Mm. So, what a great spot to be in. And you can rack up some more Bathursts and...
It is a brilliant place to be
100%. In this part of your career.
Yeah, I can. I know next year when we go to the three endurance races again that we'll be a chance to win any of those... events.
Oh, Shane's going to want a Bathurst. He's going to really want a Bathurst. I mean, and he'll still feel like he's owed one.
Especially after this year. So, look, it's perfect environment and perfect scenario. I mean, very similar to where Michael is. So, I can go. And the good thing is, this year I went and did a heap of different racing and really enjoyed that. And
gives you more time for your family. I mean, I've been
busier this year than I was for the last three or four, because between us doing RPM, so that's every Sunday in Sydney, a heap of TCR races, GT races, a lot of Triple Eight stuff away behind the scenes. I've been busier this year.
They're in smaller blocks.
Well, even if you're not racing the TCR car, you usually have to babysit because
Leanne's racing it. So it's been cool this year to do a lot of different stuff. I mean, even race Toyota 86s at the start of the year. Yeah. So just...
Should we do that together? Should we have a race against each other do that next year?
What about go overseas with Le Mans? You both could go and do Le Mans together.
I don't know if RPM could handle... us not being there.
You're right. I think ratings might go down.
Actually, I feel like I'm on a back
here. See, we can't afford to not go, because if we go and ratings go up, then we're out of a job.
Exactly. Let's get into the teams champions. Do you reckon they can take, 116 points, and how things have been going?
Well, that was one of the disappointing things about, another one of the disappointing things about the failure yesterday. Before that failure, we were 50 points in the lead.
Oh, no way.
So the swing was pretty big. There was a big opportunity there with both the Shell cars sort of not really firing yesterday to maximise it with another 1-2. So that was obviously another compounding disappointment with yesterday's result.
That would have been three in a row, wouldn't it?
But, the fact that they're in the fight for the teams going into Newcastle still, speaks volumes of how our endurance campaign went. Obviously, the penalty for Shell V Power teams from the Bathurst thing brought it much, much closer. So I think they're a chance. I genuinely think they're a chance. It's a lot of points to get in one weekend over a very quality rival. But momentum is certainly with them at the moment, for sure.
It means
there's a lot of motivation.
Well, that's why I bring it up.
It really means something to these teams. Oh, it's easy to just go, who cares about the team championship? No. The teams care about it.
Absolutely.
Even down at Tickford, they're third and fourth. Yeah.
They're in a battle with our team.
Exactly. It's a crucial part. It's something you carry for the next 12 months of racing. Mm. Yep. You know, where you stack in pit lane order, qualifying. So many things start coming into it. So everyone takes it very, very seriously in teams land.
Who's
saying that?
Yeah, your mate's crazy.
I watched the trailer for the doco, for the Erebus doco.
Oh, yeah?
Over the
what
weekend.
Do you reckon?
It's going to be good.
It's going to be real good.
I've seen parts of it.
But
it's going to be good.
I forgot you were doing that.
We've got some characters in our
team.
It's
going to be an absolute ripper.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah, cool. I think Barry's going to start. He will start.
I think he's going to make Gunther Steiner look like a lightweight from the Formula 1. That's what I reckon.
Baz wears his heart on his sleeve every day. And,
he does.
You know what he's thinking at all times.
I won't give away the first line he says in the trailer, but it is just...
Can anyone see it?
I don't know.
I don't know
if I was in a privileged position.
How did you see it?
I actually went and did it. I shouldn't say this because I'll end up getting cut from the whole thing, but went and did a little bit of filming.
They went and just pieced the camera stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot of people gone through and...
cool.
Yeah, they said, have a look at this. And I went,
You're becoming really famous these days, mate.
Oh, it's just your coattails, Chris. That's, no, all, mate. That's all it is, mate. Just,
mate, the amount of fans that come around and be like, I'd love to get him, mate. You won't find him.
He carries a texture in his pocket now.
Yeah.
All three colours.
Gold, silver, black. Just gold. Just gold for me. No, I signed another autograph on the weekend.
But was that my check?
But it was the same bloke. It was the same bloke who I got the selfie with. So I don't think it counts. I think I've still only got one fan.
You've got a fanboy. Check his Facebook account. It's a photo of you.
Its bio is ABL's biggest fan.
Fanboy.
Poor bloke. I feel very sorry for him.
Can you actually run through the points, how it finished up? Because I know a lot of people are interested in the cup.
Yeah, so ended up being you and Moff, you bombed on the weekend, mate.
Yeah, Saturday, absolutely. Friday killed us.
Hey, mate, genuinely, when I got out of the car after the first practice session, the first other car I looked for.
Yeah,
this one. I had to look a long way down the street.
Funny, I was
absolutely. Absolutely. No,
the fueling's mutual.
Weren't fine.
The fueling's mutual. Where's Garf finish? I wasn't on the radio, so I didn't get in radio days or anything like that. Where's Garf? But
So Garf, 1,203 points. 1,203 points. 255 over Lounsey.
Yes.
Ended up being another 888-12.
Another 1-2.
So 255 points over Lounsey. And Will Brown snuck into third.
Snuck in.
That second in the co-driver race really did him some...
And he missed the Winton practice session. Did the co-driver races...
They counted, did they?
It was only dedicated co-driver sessions.
Oh, okay.
And the
race. So it's got nothing to do with the race itself.
Yeah, none of the main races.
You don't want primary drivers stinking up
the whole show. No, no, no.
They're
polluting all about the important stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
that's why we started this.
So, yeah, Moff slipped down to fourth, 345 points. He's a round behind. There's only one bloke within two sessions.
We wasn't touching distance before we went into the event.
Yep.
And we thought he was going to fire at the top because he had heaps of greens.
So how many points did you get for a win?
150 per session.
The same point
structure. It was a point structure for a sprint race for every session. Okay. So I also did this on my phone calculator with a spreadsheet. So we've got to get
Ernst & Young to.
I've commissioned someone to do a proper spreadsheet next year so I can punch it all in. So I've got people working.
We need to probably get a work experience kid on this show.
I won't say.
You got him?
I'm here.
Oh, jeez.
I've done work experience once.
Oh, at Walkinshaw's, wasn't it?
No, it was a panel beater shop in Albury.
How long were you there?
Probably about 3 months.
Really?
Yeah.
You lasted that long?
Well, it was on my own car, so I had to...
You work experience on your own car.
Yeah.
You just fixed your own car.
Basically, he just told me what to do.
Must have some serious
I was probably
damage.
16 or something at the time, yeah. I wasn't...
How much damage did it have in it? It was three months.
I bought my first car was a Mazda RX-7 Series 1 I bought for $1,000, and then...
Good car.
Yeah, great car.
Wish you still had it now.
I still
got
it.
Worth more than $1,000 now.
Still got it. Yeah, still got it.
Good work.
Manual?
Yeah, Manuel, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Series 1, so it's 10A.
It'd be
12A.
12A. It come as a 12A Bridgeport, and then I spent...
Put a turbo on it, bro?
Every cent I've had.
Turbo rotaries.
They actually did.
Yeah, I know, but you
don't. They're worth a lot of money, the 12A turbo.
Oh, yeah, the original ones.
The original ones are.
You want to make big power, mate. You do not turbo him.
Well, yeah, I got a 13B turbo and put it in.
That was the gun one, wasn't it? The 13B.
Yeah, 13B turbo. Yeah, she was
hot rig.
Point
with a hairdryer on the side. Come on.
Bigger leader. Hey?
Take the headlight out. Get some more air in there.
it's a cool bit of kit. But yeah that was cut. That's probably why I failed school, I think. Well, I'm blaming that one.
You failed school because of a Mazda RX-7?
Yeah, because okay. I spent all my...
It's a fair stretch.
See that, all my schooling years later
Dave,
in life.
Having doing known you car. For a very long time, it wasn't the car.
Fail school anyway, yeah.
What was your childhood hot rod, yeah. Garth? What were you cruising around the street?
First car. Yep.
Was a...
VL
it's
turbo.
Actually interesting because when I joined Holden, the Holden PR man, who's no longer the Holden PR man, who
Gerald,
we all know,
Gerald, excellent.
He said, mate,
the Deborah Sky.
Your first car has to be a VC Commodore.
He said that to you.
But it wasn't a VC Commodore, Gerald. Yeah, but for the media stuff,
for the
it has to be. So for the last 15 years, I've been saying my first car was a VC Commodore. So I'll give you a below the bonnet exclusive.
Oh, sweet.
World exclusive.
It was an XF Falcon.
Oh, there we go.
And it was a piece of junk. I wanted to get a Mark II
first
RS2000 Escort.
Ooh. Oh, wow.
So I wanted, and they were too expensive. Because my old man was a Ford man growing up. So I wanted...
Is he with you?
I wanted a... he's got a Commodore now. I wanted a Mark II.
He got a good deal.
Yeah, I did get him a deal. I wanted a Mark II RS2000 Escort.
They're a good piece of machinery.
But back in the day, a long time ago, they were still too expensive. So he got me this XF Falcon that I had to pay half
Really interesting connection here. Rear-wheel drive.
Yeah.
You had a front wheeler, didn't you?
You did.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, what did you have?
You had like a Mazda 1-2. No, that was your GRM car.
No, that was my GRM car. I had a Laser.
Was it a Mark II?
I had a Laser.
Ford Laser.
What's that?
Ford
Escort.
No, Mark II I wanted. Mark II. But I didn't get it.
I had a Laser as well, but I also had a Mark II Escort, but it wasn't an RS2000.
Mate, I would have been happy with a 1.8 with the RS2000 stickers on it.
Yes.
Nice 1600 for it that would not have passed any Formula Ford tolerances, I can tell you. Went straight in the Escort, so we built it out of a Formula Ford engine, and she was a
Your old man didn't pop that back into Formula Ford every now and then, did he?
Nah, I don't think so.
Two Western Australians here. Did you guys ever race each other?
No, I was well gone before that. I did a bit of racing, but that was us. But obviously, our old man would have known Dirt and JBL.
Yeah.
They would have knocked around.
You tested.
Wanneroo.
What else did you do? You tested some. Didn't you test the car recently? The 5000.
I tested the S5000.
Well, he drove it.
I drove it.
Say he
tested it. That is actually completely wrong. Yeah.
Just looking on car sales.
What are you doing? Yeah, how much?
Mate. Oh, they're 27 grand now.
They're ridiculous.
Yeah, they are crazy money now.
An RS2000. Yeah.
See, my old man,
manual.
See, we should have bought it. Good investment.
If you'd had
good
a,
investment, yeah.
Would have
yeah.
taken us 20 years to make 20 grand.
If you had a Lotus Twin Cam Mark 1,
that was crazy.
Absolutely.
That's 100 grand.
Is that a Cosworth one?
Doesn't Steve Richards have one?
Richo's got one, and Jim's got a couple.
Yeah.
Yeah, Jim's got a serious one, like a serious one.
Yeah.
Like serious Mark 1.
Speaking of Jim Richards... He's on Instagram. He started following me the other day.
You're joking.
It's his grandkids that are doing it for him. But it is officially...
Jim Richards is following me.
It is officially from the Richards family.
That's great.
Yeah, it's cool.
Yeah.
And he's on Facebook and all the rest of it. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm getting on that.
It's a dark world, Jim.
He is the coolest. Oh, you can imagine Richo on there? No, he's not on there.
What type of screen text size do you reckon he's running on his phone?
Jim. I reckon he'd be regular, mate.
Yeah, I reckon he's
sharp as a tack,
yeah, he's very sharp.
Does Retro Round need like a veterans race on the weekend?
No.
Yeah.
No.
Come on.
What's this you read? I read now that they're talking about making it compulsory.
Well, it's because like over the weekend there probably wasn't as many teams
doing it
as there was in the past. And it kind of looked weird that some cars were normal, some cars were retro.
There were some very fishy retro liveries as well.
The Milwaukee
one.
Yeah.
The Milwaukee one.
Well, that was just a different Fujitsu car.
Not sure they
were retro.
They weren't very retro.
A 2009 DBS car is interesting.
It's interesting because then how can a sport dictate commercial arrangements within a race team?
Well, for us, for instance,
what's retro about Monster?
2015 Scott Pye car from DVS. What can we do?
That's the thing. So
it's very difficult.
I get that they want to build. It's not novelty. What's the word? But they want to build something
around. They're trying to give the event identity. That's what it's 100%. All about. They're trying
and the
to create
Sandown
identity.
Event is 100% the right one to do it at because it's such history around that.
Everything.
I mean, it is like the Asheville. It's still old school.
Some parts of it.
Some of it's original.
The fencing is still old school.
The grandstand, that was original.
Actually.
But we're lucky in Penrite because they've got a bit of history.
Yeah,
they can actually change their logo to however they want. They're not so corporatized in, you have to run these colors in this font.
And They do a good job of that.
They can do whatever.
But for example, Red Bull, they're very particular about their logo,
which makes it very difficult, which makes it hard.
I mean, even the fact that we did the retro livery at Bathurst, I was massively surprised that we were doing that because I know the limitations around the
Red Bull stuff. Monster are very, very similar. I think 100%. A lot of the new corporate brands are.
Yeah.
You know, and it's hard. They're the guys paying the bills, so you can imagine how those conversations are going to go
down.
At
the exact same time, we actually spoke. We had a bit of a round table with Sean Seamer on the weekend, and we were talking about where those quotes came from that some other outlets had run. And it was, he was saying, you can't stop if Red Bull and Holden want to do the Bathurst livery instead of Sandown, you can't stop them either.
No.
You know, like you just can't say, no, you have to do it at Sandown. Yeah.
And there's no doubt that Red Bull and Holden did it at Bathurst to be ahead and go,
We've done a bit of punch.
Yep. Yeah. We did it at Bathurst.
Stand
no
out
one
a
else.
Bit.
We stood out from the crowd.
Yeah.
So, and leverage that's what Red Bull are very good at.
Yeah.
So, well, that's leverage wise, though, if you're talking about events and how much you get out of it, Bathurst is clearly, you're getting a lot. You're on track 4 days.
The ratings, everything.
Yeah. There's a lot more eyes on it. Where Sandown, obviously, and particularly next year, is probably not going to have the same eyeballs that it had this year.
But it's going to become more important next year to give it some sort of identity.
Because it's not a 500.
Because it's not the Sandown 500 anymore. And you don't want to. You don't want to throw everything at Bathurst. If you make that the retro round, it's already the Bathurst 1000.
No,
it's already the biggest race of the year.
It sells itself, that
biggest race there. Yeah. I always get a bit torn on something like what you guys did, which the cars looked mint, but then I think, where's the relevance to your team? But does that matter? I don't know. I get stuck in the middle of...
Does it really matter?
That's the question.
Yeah, well, that's where I think they've got the identity thing is, like what you guys did, looked awesome, and it 100% was a retro thing based on the JPS BMWs.
Yep.
But then you look at what BJR did with their Aussie male black and white cars, which was 100% to the BJR lineage.
Yeah, that's
so, and that looked really, really cool.
Yeah, the Walkinshaw cars as well.
Yeah, they look fantastic. Great relevance to what they've done. But then you look at what Webby did with the Bob Morris retro thing, which I actually think that was the pick of the bunch. I thought that looked really smart.
Super old.
Really, really cool. But there's no relevance.
No relevance at all.
Yeah. But Bob Morris was based in Sydney. That team's going to be based in Sydney next year.
So privateer.
So I don't know whether someone very, very smart in the background's gone, let's just do the Sydney thing because that's where we're headed in the future.
The other option would be that they just pick an year, like pick a decade or something each year, and go it's 80s or it's this.
Yeah,
thing, and
I
you
reckon
go and
that's
pick
a good
your
idea.
Favorite.
That's
you go pick your favorite little bit out of that.
You don't have to change the cars. You could just do your costumes, your pit gear, or. It doesn't have to be just the car.
It comes
in expensive.
And it's small. Hey, man, yeah. It's a big
that's
big
the thing
bus.
We've got to remember. Like, we keep harping on in the category about
cutting costs.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah.
So
well, what's
I
the cost to wrap a car? She's $3,000-$4,000 to wrap a car.
Well, and
it's
painting spares.
And then wheels. And it's all that sort of stuff. Like,
that's why you're often painting wheels. You often see
there's a lot of
the launch photos with painted wheels, and then the cars turn up with non-painted wheels. Yeah, it's just cost a fortune.
Dave, at one point, Davo came in with like black wheels on the car and left with red wheels on the weekend. You know,
it's $25,000-$30,000 to paint all the wheels. If you're going to paint your car per car, paint the allocation. I remember we talked about it at GRM. It's $25,000-$30,000 per car for the rim allocation just to get painted.
But what you guys did, you just had those like stick-on hubcaps. Remember that?
That was the Volvo. But
that
didn't race
really. That looked really sharp.
But they didn't race with that.
But we are behind something like that. But it's just obviously it's got to work for everybody. Mm. We just need to come up with a concept that works for everyone and they're happy to do. Because at the end of the day, when you've got hopefully 25, 26, 27 cars on the grid,
but it's interesting they do it. NRL do the retro round thing quite big. Mm-hmm. Do they get any
benefit
traction
from it?
Out of it?
I don't know.
I get a big buzz out of it. Curious some feedback on your socials from some of your followers about do they
get behind
other
it?
Other than the change of the colour, because one thing that actually surprises me is how much our fans love livery changes.
Yeah,
love it.
Yep.
But other than the livery changes, how much do the fans? Do they embrace the retro thing?
Yeah, good idea. Well,
I reckon they do because they turn up in all the retro gear.
Yeah.
They can dig up all their old stuff. People have full costume get-ups. Mm. They walk around the pits for the whole weekend.
That's our rusted-on, hardcore supercar
fans. Yeah, probably.
Does having a retro round bring another 5,000 people in the gate at Sandown?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it plays to those rusted-on fans.
Yes.
But maybe that's like, there's all this talk at the moment. Well, I guess it's always going on about new fans, this and that. But like, you got to give something to the existing fans as well.
Yeah,
there's
100%.
Such a law, and it's something like, particularly doing this podcast, we've really seen it. Like, we've had that hardcore engagement with proper fans. It's an important group of people as well. It's easy to lose sight of that.
You don't want to alienate them.
Yeah, you can't afford to.
Well, let's cover it quickly. Picks for Newcastle.
Far out.
It's hard to look past Triple Eight at the moment, I think.
Oregon's going to be a good old-fashioned Giz and Scotty battle for the weekend.
Knock them down, drag them out.
I reckon they're going to be going at it.
Be a 1-2, Triple Eight 1-2. Ooh. I don't know which way, but I reckon...
I think you'll see a very highly motivated Shane Van Gisbergen.
Yeah. What about... Well, how do you...
Oh, man, he's dark at the moment.
When he's, can I say something about him? He's actually turned a corner.
Ooh.
Within his person. Like,
what
he's
are you
become,
saying?
Well, like he's... He feels like he's a lot more approachable, and he's become much more of a human, I think.
He's a big believer of the Co-Driver Cup. He put something up on the weekend.
Did he? I know, but honestly, you must agree.
I have noticed a change in him this year.
He seems like he's become much more approachable, much more human about things. And I think he's
always been like that for me.
For me. But really, must just be one of us on the... Yeah.
I think he's done a good job.
Having spent a bit of time with him, I think he's actually misjudged
and misunderstood
because he's actually a very shy person, a really shy individual that doesn't like...
The limelight.
Hates the media stuff. Not because he's a bad person.
Not that
he
hates it because
like
he doesn't want to do it.
Exactly.
He's not comfortable doing a lot of it. So,
but I think we all probably started like that.
But everyone's different, mate. And everyone grows into it. You've grown into your whatever you are. and I remember when I started, I used to shit myself before the cameras came on.
Everyone did.
And so everyone does it differently. So I actually... Like I say, I've known him since he started in supercars, raced against him from his first ever race. But
me too, mate.
Yeah.
You raced against a lot of people.
Yeah, I've raced against pretty much all of them. But got getting
20
known
years
closer.
You're gonna race everyone.
I think he's changed a bit this year. I agree with that. I've talked to a few people this weekend about it.
Do you know if he listens to our show?
No.
I don't think so.
This show ain't for that type of person.
I was going to say, come on, Shane, come on.
He does one of our rival podcasts quite regularly. So he was on Stubbs's deal the other week.
No, come on. He loves it. He loves it. Good for a laugh.
Yeah.
But really, like I said, I think quite shy.
Yep.
And
we'll get it out.
And very private. Very private. Yeah, very private.
And it happens a lot, just private in
what he shares, effectively.
It happens a lot in sport where people that are shy and private come across as looking arrogant
and distant.
And it's absolutely not the case.
It's absolutely not the case at all.
Dave, how are you going to go? Newcastle, mate. Well,
reigning winner. Last time we were there, you walked away.
Yeah, strong. Our car's
been really good at street tracks.
It's a Commodore, so Opel. Opel Commodore. What do we call it?
How long? Hey, didn't you race one this year, mate? You can't be saying that.
Yeah, you can't be.
Well, I can say whatever I want. That's what this podcast is all about. We say what we want.
No ramifications.
It's not about ramifications. You don't have to listen to this podcast. Right, exactly. You've got to download
it. So you'll be strong.
Yeah,
we haven't heard your...
No, Cam will be very strong. He's got four sets of greens sitting there after what happened on the weekend.
Okay,
so he'll be very strong in
practice.
It'll help. So you know what it's like.
I've got seven sets of greens.
Oh,
here we go.
Oh, yeah, you can only
take three.
Well, there you go.
It's going to be like the top 10 shooter.
So you'll be quick
in practice one.
I'll be quick. Tail and bend next year too.
Yeah. I'm always a Friday special.
No tie bank.
They'll change that.
What do you mean? There's no
sauce. I reckon next year's tail and bend round.
Well, you run hard to tail and bend.
They've got to change that.
Yeah, they do have to make it soft, 100%.
Let's just agree on here that, hey, Sean, do what you got to do, mate. Softs, tail and bend.
I think they 100% need to test the softs at the test there in January or February,
whenever it is. Just throw them on.
They're worried about the tyre
load
construction through the triple right out the back.
Really?
Yeah, worried about failure there. But for the 500
how good was that race when all the soft tyres failed at...
Oh, it was awesome.
Yeah, it was good. Dunlop loved it. Yeah.
No, but you...
Commercial
partner. What did you come? Second?
Third.
I was watching. It was great.
Yeah.
I blew two tyres.
No, but I think for the 500 there, given we're going there for the 500 next year, it needs to be on the soft tyre.
Yeah,
there needs to be some deck.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the race is going to be quite stretched out.
Yeah.
And it's a long track, so it can be really stretched.
Yeah,
you know, like,
that's the field spread will be huge there if they don't create some deg and some strategy around all that. So they definitely need to test that.
Well, let's be... Everything we say in here normally happens.
So, given it. Yeah.
given we've predicted a lot of stuff.
We have this
unfortunately
year.
Predicted a lot of stuff. Don't know whose fortune it is, but...
So you reckon the executive of Supercars just wait every Monday for the pod to come
listen
out?
In.
Probably. Yeah,
they're probably waiting to know so. what they should do for Newcastle. No, I don't know.
What are you doing the rest of the day?
Yeah, mate. What do you got on?
I've got to go pick kids up from school, and then we've got karate.
Karate.
Is it Karaka? Scarlett's on camp at the moment, so I don't have to pick her up. It's just Sebastian and I this afternoon.
Karaka
boys.
Leanne's at work. So.
Is there any go-karts in the shed? Is there anything going
go-kart,
on there?
Yeah, go-kart in the shed. We were out the other day. We're out on Melbourne Cup day.
Yeah.
Yeah, both of them. It's only got one for them to share at the moment until they're
just like
serious
us.
About it.
Not into the horses. Yeah,
so we're out karting and...
Why do they do karate?
Sebastian does karate.
Yeah?
Yeah, yeah.
It's good discipline.
It's actually meant to be a very good discipline.
He wanted to do it. Yeah, he has to do like, it. From
the sensei
six,
hammers him. And,
yeah, yeah, 100% yeah, cool. Like from the age of six. Like, he's only just started, but, man, they're into him. Like, you've got to do this, got to do that.
Yeah.
And, mate, they get... It's not they get into trouble, but they get drilled.
Yeah, yeah.
Do this. So
what belt
it creates.
On?
Oh, mate, we'll start white belt. So it, but it creates, and the amount of people that say, "Oh, get your kids into karate," and I didn't do it as a kid, didn't know anything about it. The amount of people that said, "Do it," it's great for their temperament. It's great for their discipline, structure,
respect.
All that sort of stuff. So, young fella, he's not a rat bag, but he goes pretty hard. So it's good for him just to straighten up.
Who does he take after you or Leanne?
Oh, his mum for sure.
I would have benefited from doing karate or something like that as a kid. Would have given me some structure, some discipline.
Yeah, well, you took up a bit of martial arts later in life.
Yeah,
kickboxing.
MMA, I still do a bit, yeah. But I wish I actually started that as a young tacker.
Do you reckon you would have been a better MMA fighter than you are a race car driver?
I've got my mum's body. Like, I'm skinny.
Are you saying your dad's got a bit of weight carrying around?
Well, he's like Homer Simpson.
Yeah. Didn't you? You made reference to his weight on TV or something on the weekend, didn't you? Yeah, something about a dentist. I think Murph after you had a dent. I don't know. Can't remember.
I had a sore tooth, and I know a good dentist. I said, "He's my fat bald old man."
That's it. That's what it was.
I love my dad. I love you. My favorite.
You got a very strange
dad I've ever had.
Best dad you've ever had.
Well, thanks for coming on, GT boys.
Pleasure.
Yeah.
Congratulations
again.
Good campaign.
Looking forward to defending my cup next year.
There we go. It's already started.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, I reckon.
Yeah,
next year,
preparations
mate,
have already started.
I'm looking.
You said that this year, mate. You didn't even turn up.
Nah, next year we're going to do it bigger and better.
We've got to start engraving it all on
is
here.
That perpetual?
Every year. This has got to be perpetual. So you've got to change this.
Notes, young players,
and
never drink out of perpetual cups.
And then, yes. And then start engraving them.
Stories. Or like send me photos of you drinking out of a perpetual cup because no doubt I've teabagged it.
Is there a particular trophy you're talking about? Because there's one trophy that stands above all trophies.
It is like you can put stuff in there and drink out of it. And
we're talking about the Peter Brock trophy?
Yes, we are.
I was just thinking, what title am I going to use for this episode? And thank you very much. I've got it.
That's right. Well, there you go.
That is great. We've done it. You absolute beauty.
All right. Thanks, boys and girls.
Thanks, everyone.
We'll see you soon.
Bye. Ciao.